After the 2016 election, the Republican Party seized control not just of the White House and Congress, but of many state governments. To be precise, the GOP seized control of both legislative chambers in 32 states and governor offices in 33 states, a majority the party hasn't held since 1928. How did this happen? Over the last couple decades, the Democratic Party has made a very strategic choice to abandon state and local races to focus on winning federal races. The GOP, on the other hand, poured money into winning state governor seats and state congresses. For Republicans, it paid off. In the new book, All Politics is Local, Why Progressives Must Fight for the States, journalist Megan Winter argues that the Democratic Party and progressive organizations must change their strategy in order to win back those states. Again, the name of the book is All Politics is Local, Why Progressives Must Fight for the States, and we welcome Megan Winter to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
What brought you to this idea of all politics being local, which, of course, is something Tip O'Neill always used to say. So why in this context?
My real awakening about how important state politics in particular are came in around 2015, 2016. I was a reporter for national magazines covering abortion and reproductive rights. And of course, as many of your listeners know, I'm sure, abortion is partially regulated by states. So that reporting brought me to state capitals, including Jefferson City, Missouri. And I went to these hearings to watch abortion laws being discussed. And while I happened to be there, while I just happened to be in the room, I saw gun bills, voting bills, discussions about Medicaid, all of these extremely important issues. And there weren't very many people there, especially there were a few state house reporters who were working incredibly hard, but there was so much to cover. It's hard to imagine that they would be able to cover everything that was being discussed. And I was the only national reporter there, despite the fact that many of these bills were the kind of hot button issues that are often covered in the national press. You know, we're talking about the first Stand Your Ground bill since Trayvon Martin had been killed. Was passed and put into law in Missouri that week that I happened to be there. That afternoon was really the moment of awakening, watching all of these things happen and realizing how much happens in the state level by design, because it's much harder for the mainstream public to pay attention to what's happening there.
So in taking on this project and looking at what the book explores, You talk about how big issues, emotional issues, abortion, gun control, these are fought on the state level. We don't often think of them. We think of them as national issues, but they are fought on the state level.
So states have a lot of leeway in regulating a whole number of issues from, as you just said, guns and abortion. Right now, they have a lot of leeway in whether or not to expand Medicaid. There are a number of issues that states have so much power and control in terms of how they regulate. And in particular, by design, libertarian and conservative political strategists chose to execute their plans on the state level. For example, the anti-abortion movement. They decided that they were going to chip away at laws on the state level and the mainstream public wouldn't notice until it was too late, which is effectively what's happened now. And that's not just with the anti-abortion movement. That's with a whole number of movements, as well as corporate lobbies, for example, oil and gas. A number of these industries that we think of on the national stage, and they affect all of us no matter where we live in the country, but those interest groups and corporate lobbies have specifically decided that they can wield a lot of power in the states, which they can because, of course, states regulate so much that affects our daily lives, much more so, I would argue, than a lot of what happens in Congress or on the federal stage. As we know, Congress is gridlocked, and the federal situation, as we know, it's a mess.
Talk a little bit about the judiciary and the courts and the impact that has as well.
This is huge. I'm so glad you asked that. So the states have always been important, but they're especially important right now, and the judiciary is a major reason. So as I'm sure, again, listeners are aware, the composition of the Supreme Court has changed, so there's a conservative majority there. And as well, under President Trump, Republicans have installed an unprecedented number of federal judges. And these federal judges by and large, have been vetted by conservative interest groups to be sure that they will protect and advance a very particular conservative agenda. So what does that mean? That means it's even more important that there's not, from the perspective of Democrats and progressives, I should say, but also honestly for centrists and for all of us, I would argue, it's even more important that Republicans and conservatives do not have supermajorities in state legislatures, because if Republicans and conservatives have super majorities and they can pass whatever bills they want, even if they're not popular in their state, even if they're sort of fringe or what we would have considered out of bounds 10 years ago, the same lawmakers who are passing those extreme bills, those conservative judges, are now much more likely to keep those laws in place, even if they're out of bounds of what most Americans would like to see. So we have judges and lawmakers who are vetted and supported by the same network of conservative organizations. And that means it's much likelier that these extreme state law bills will climb the courts and set national precedents.
When you look at red and blue, and when you think about all politics being local, what is fascinating, and I just, you have, it's Florida on the front cover of your book.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of red there, you have pink, and then you have these spots of blue, mostly the cities.
Mm-hmm.
So even in the states, you can have really a lot of division. And
mm-hmm.
So I'm interested in how that division then makes a state in the national sphere red, blue, a swing state, not a swing state, solid blue, solid red, and how that eventually becomes a national issue.
Okay, so a number of things to say about that, but briefly, a few things that stand out in my mind is, one, in states across the country, for example, I was just in St. Louis, which is a place where there's a lot of progressive organizing happening, but those organizers ultimately hit a ceiling because the Missouri legislature is so governed by very far-right Republicans. So there's this open question right now when the cities are this place of organizing, people are moving to the left, there's a lot happening in terms of Democratic voters, and even the suburban voters are turning Democratic. But the question is, how are they then going to change policy and the culture of the state if their legislature is solidly Republican, in part because of gerrymandering, in part because of the amount of investment that Republicans have put on the state level? So there's that question. And another sort of somewhat related point that I describe quite a bit in the book, and I think is really important for people to understand, for so many years, you know, how did the map flip when there were so many states have flipped in recent years, especially their state legislatures, to Republican when they were Democratic? And how did that happen? In part because Democratic strategists on the national level became very obsessed with only winning states that they could win for the national elections. And so the moment that it seemed like on a national stage for a presidential race, let's say, a state was not going to be a solid, sure bet for Democrats, for example, Missouri, Democrats would pull out all funding, which meant that down ballot, those Democrats lost. And that meant that they couldn't regain the next year. It was a sort of an all or nothing federal strategy. And that is not good for building power long term. And that's something we really have to be aware of, especially heading into this presidential cycle, when there's so much attention, understandably, on the 2020 race. But that is only one of the ways that power is built long term. And there's this other major way, which is through the states, which, as I said, has mounting importance given the judiciary and redistricting and all of these other important things that are happening.
When it gets down to it, how does a state like Alabama, progressives in the state of Alabama, how do they fight for their state?
Well, there's people all across the country who are organizing. And something that I've observed, I didn't look at Alabama as closely as some other states, but I can say in a state like Florida, which has a supermajority in the legislature as well, Missouri the same, I think something that's really successful that Democrats, progressives, however you define yourself, can do long term, whether you care about a particular issue or you care generally about a party plank or whatever it is, committing to doing work that's not only based on election cycles. So for years, Democrats, again, have been obsessed with this boom-bust election cycle, especially the presidential cycle thinking. But as I've learned from my reporting this book and talking to so many people, the best thing people can do is commit to year-round organizing around issues, showing up, going to council meetings, going to the legislature, working on campaigns for state candidates and city council candidates where you can make a huge difference just by showing up, because these campaigns are run on a shoestring and you can really help. And if by changing, by showing up constantly, you may not win that year, but you change the cultural narrative and you change what's acceptable and you show people that things are possible and that it's not just these, you know, crazy Democrats who live in New York or California. You kind of destigmatize some of the messaging because you're neighbors and you can talk in a way that is, you know, more resonant to people who live near you than someone coming through the TV screen.
Well, the name of the book is All Politics is Local: Why Progressives Must Fight for the States. The book is published by Bold Type Books. Megan Winter, thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is All Politics is Local. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.